imagine the Iron Throne fought with kindness. I read this book in basically two sittings.
Huh.
I loved it. The two scenes that I cried at. Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tune Around Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're doing another book review on The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison. This is a book that has been highly recommended to both of us, mainly from our buddy, good buddy Coop. He's been like winner. He's has a great track record with recommending us books. And I've been looking forward to this one for a while. I'm so glad I read it. I read this while we were on our little cruise vacation.
That's right.
Spoiler for my thoughts on the book, I guess. Spoiler free. But point being, I loved this book. I read this book in basically two sittings.
Huh.
I loved it.
I finished this book literally today. And this is spoiler free, by the way. Okay, first 10 minutes, spoiler free.
Yeah. We'll describe a little bit about what the book's about.
Yes.
Hopefully get you interested in actually reading it. Then we're going to go into spoilers.
This book coming out in 2014 by Catherine Addison. It's a part of a series, I believe.
But it can be read as a standalone. Yes. As far, like,
you absolutely
can read this, yeah. And it is one complete story, and that's it.
Yes, it's not, hey, it could be. No, it definitely reads as a standalone. You do
there,
not.
There are other things in the series, but it doesn't directly follow. It's not like a direct sequel. There are just other stories in this world that are tangentially related.
Yes, yes. And so, yeah, I finished this book just today. You finished it when we were on the. It took you two sittings to read it. That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And this is not that thin of a book either. It's. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big enough book. It's a
good enough sized book. I just didn't want to put it down. I loved it.
This, how would you pitch this book to people?
I will give the concept. I'm just going to put the thought-provoking nature of this concept idealized into this book is kindness should not be confused as naivete. That idea right there, is it naive to be kind? Add that with your Game of Thrones politique, you know, battling for the throne, all type of deal. But again, remember, kindness is the forefront. Can you fight for the throne with kindness?
Yeah. So
that's the idea. I mean, it also is about a bunch of different things of trauma, forgiveness, your identity, hierarchies in place, tons of great themes and questions to go through. But yeah, imagine the Iron Throne fought with kindness.
That's a funny way of describing it. Yeah, the basic premise of the book, like inciting incident, is it's called Goblin Emperor because the old emperor and all the emperor's heirs die in an accident right from the get-go of the book. They're gone from this tragic accident, which there's more to that. But our main character, Maya, is half goblin, half elf. And he is the next in-line heir to the throne. But nobody ever thought he would be the emperor because he was so far down the line because there was the emperor and the next three or four of kin, right? He had three, four sons, something like that. And then our goblin emperor was just off in another area, never thought he would be in this position, but the next in the hierarchy is him. So it's such a surprise. He's coming in having a completely different upbringing than everybody else, and that's the premise of the story. This kind-hearted goblin who now has to suppose this throne.
Yeah.
And see how the shenanigans that ensue. Yeah, I finished it today. I'm pretty neutral on the book. I'm pretty milquetoast about it. And
it hurts.
It hurts.
So
by the way, if anybody wants to join our Patreon, link in the description below, because Dove from our Patreon said something that struck true. The more I was reading it, I was like, yeah, kind of, I see what you mean. She was like, she DNF'd the book because it seemed like a bunch of Zoom meetings. And I thought that was a funny description of it. To get people's expectations in, if you've ever watched the Kai Cenat live stream, imagine live... Kai Cenat. You don't know Kai Cenat?
No.
Oh.
What does he do?
It's the biggest live streamer on Twitch.
Oh.
I'm proud of you. I'm honestly good for you.
That is not my quarter of the internet.
Imagine any live streamer.
Okay.
Okay. Different analogy. For Rich, imagine do you know any live streamer?
I know Hassan Piker and Asmund Gold are streamers, right?
Yes. Okay. Imagine any streamer in your head, okay? Anyway, okay, analogy's out the window. That just shocked me. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry. You know I Show Speed? That's it.
No. Who's that?
Oh my God, Rich.
I don't like streamers.
I mean, I don't. I see the clips that. Anyways, that's another conversation that we gotta.
Whatever. Wow. That's fine.
Okay. You know what? I'm proud of you on that.
Thank you.
All right. Anyways, point taken. That's what Goblin Emperor is. It feels like you're getting a live stream of his life. You get all the politicking nitty details. And anybody who would like this book, I have a feeling cozy fantasy fans will like this. People who are into. It has great world building and the prose is very unique. I mean, I should come with a big warning here into the rest of this review that Rich and I are going to slaughter these names, butcher these names.
However,
we are going to
most of the time, it's our fault.
We take credit for that.
It's us.
Yes.
We know we're terrible about the names. We're sorry. We feel the guilt.
Yes.
This time, no guilt. This is not on us. These names are hard, and...
Whew, boy.
No, I refuse to take blame for getting these names wrong. I'm sorry. They're just really hard. There's too many consonants in them. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
just how it is.
The names are very difficult. But to set up people's expectations, it's not action-heavy. It's more politicking. Yeah, I liked your description of treating the throne with kindness. That's a very apt description of the book. For me, this has its moments... but I'll get, I don't want to get into too much spoiler territory, but I'll say it does feel like you're in a lot of Zoom meetings at times and there's some interesting stuff that happens, but more to be desired. I'm going to be batting around. We're doing something new as well with these reviews, but at the end of this, we're going to see if Richard I's scores have changed.
Okay.
So we'll see. I would love to be convinced to go higher. This one's
definitely
very
don't feel the Zoom call meeting. It's. Yeah. It is very much.
Oh, that's being a little derogatory, I know.
Yeah,
but
I just don't feel it at all. It is very much just a politic. You get the intimate, personal, day-to-day life of the emperor trying to fight for his throne that he has been, fight for this responsibility.
Skype meeting, right. A little bit more excitement.
Of course. It's like Skype
Zoom
meeting.
Zoom was too low-bearing.
Sure.
Got it. a Google Meet.
Okay.
But what did you give it out of 5 stars?
5.
Oh, floored you.
Floored me.
Oh, crap.
By our definition.
I did not realize that.
By our definition of
damn
floored.
Yeah.
Generally, one of the markers of that is the book is used as an example for a certain aspect. It has now taken the place of a concept, an idea that you want to share with others. Like, this is my example book.
Oh, wow.
This is my example book of noble leadership, and I love the amount of grimdark I keep reading of just kindness is just being it's naive to be kind. And this is a refutation of that. I love how this is done. It's taken, far as saying Aragorn is the ideal king, the noble leader.
Aragorn. Yes. Yes.
This Goblin Emperor is now taking the place. Like if I want a book about hey, noble leaders and how to actually be kind yet wise. This, I love it. I love this book. Not only that, but it did make me cry distinctly twice.
Wow.
I cried twice during this book. I was emotionally invested. I loved this book.
I would have been less mean if I knew this was a 5 for you.
A 5, man.
Because we don't talk about this before, and I had no idea.
Yeah, no, this is
damn
fantastic.
I would have been kinder with my words. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I gave this a 3 out of 5. I'm neutral on the book, and okay, maybe you'll impress me with this.
I'll
and
be honest.
It,
I'm shocked. I'm shocked you don't like it as much. I would think the themes itself would build on.
I have some thoughts there. Yeah.
I have some genuine criticisms of it. There are some things that we'll talk about where I think could have used work. But
sure.
As far as the emotional investment, the thought-provoking nature, the themes that this book goes into and has become my new example, yeah, I love this book. I highly recommend this book to people. I loved it. Thank you very much, Coop. You were right.
And so there's maybe a similar book. It kind of almost gave me By Blood by Salt vibes a little bit at times. Mm. Did you get a little bit of that?
The nature of it being far more politics, not action. Yeah, there's absolutely zero action in this book. Expect nothing of that. It is all conversation. That is all it is. Mm. Negotiation, talking in the hallway. That's all it is. I love it.
Awesome. Okay, I'm trying to think. Anything else in spoiler-free territory you'd want to let people know? Anything that, by the way, affiliate link in the description if you want to check out Goblin Emperor.
Yep. Did you mention the book club?
I mentioned the book club.
But I'm sorry.
You can always mention it twice. It's totally fine.
We forget to self-promote.
We don't have two book clubs.
Sometimes.
It's just one book club, but mentioned twice. That's what marketing does. You just say it over and over again.
The other thing we forgot. You can buy bookmarks. We got bookmarks.
We also have merch. We do.
All right. We've done the self-promotion.
All right.
We can move on.
Anything else? Spoiler-free. I think we gave the plot summary. Okay. Anything else?
What was your lowest category?
My lowest was tied. It was mainly emotion. It was emotion and plot. But my highest were tied with world building and prose. This is one of those books that's technically very well done. Catherine Addison does a great job. It's technically great. Does not hit, and which we'll get into more in spoilers. I guess really the only spoiler-free thing I could say of why those were my lower categories is the A and B plot in this story doesn't promise much. It is the cozy fantasy feel for you. I think you have to really lock into the vibe of the book early on, or else you just will not. Yeah, I want to keep spoiler-free, so I'll be a little careful there. But
fair enough. Yeah, my lowest category is plot as well.
Okay, yeah. So, that could tell you then, even somebody who loved the book, someone who was more about it, don't go in expecting spectacular plot. I think the things you'll like about this most, you can really fall in love with the main character. The world building, the prose is very, it can either be awful to you, because some people will hate how there's so many fantasy terms and weirdness and pronouns being used. By pronouns, I mean a person will refer to them as we, us, our, rather than I, me. So when you're reading their dialogue...
The royal we is...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
so if I was saying, hey, I, Austin, doing this book review, we are doing this book review. Our thoughts are, but I'm not saying Rich and I, I'm just talking about myself. So there's stuff like that. So it's high fantasy words. Expect that. Okay, hopefully I think people know what they're getting into now. We did our job there, maybe. So, all right, spoiler warning?
Yeah.
Spoiler warning for Goblin Emperor. Here we go. And
emotional impact. What did you give it?
2.75, below average.
Oof. Yeah, 4.75. Nearly floored.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely spectacular.
Can we start with the best scene of the book, actually? Let's start on a high.
You want to start on the high?
Let's start on the high. The best scene of the book is my best boy, Idra.
Oh, yeah.
I liked
that scene. It was not my favorite.
It was my favorite scene of where... Oh, I thought we were going to find some agreement. But it was my favorite scene where the coup is being attempted against Maya from Shavar and from the other character.
Hold on.
Please help.
Chevian?
Sure. Okay. So by them, right? And they have this coup all planned, and they take Maya. They have somebody take Maya. They're ready to go. And Maya's like, "All right, before I abdicate, if I'm going to abdicate, you're either going to kill me or I'm going to talk to your son at the very least." And that's the options. And good old Idra comes in there. It's like, "Mother, how dare you?" Like, basically the anti-Joffrey. Mother, you Cersei-looking bitch! And then says, this is unacceptable. I liked seeing Idra at that, the complete opposite of what you'd expect from your, like, Prince Brat. We got just a nice, kind kid. And that was very heartwarming. And then subsequently followed by a very not heartwarming scene where we have to watch the bloodletting and the basically the what's it called?
The in execution. This,
the execution. But there's a specific fantasy term they call it. Starts with an R. The
I get you. I don't know the fantasy Sorry,
that,
term.
That was my favorite scenes. Go. You love the book. What did you love about it? Talk it
sure.
up.
Sure. To me, that scene was more of a downer, mainly due to plot reasons. So I'll get it. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay.
Plot wise, like the coups is the worst part about the book, but that's fine. I loved it for things.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The two scenes that I cried at.
Oh, yes.
I cried when Maya received the presents from people around
Happy
the
birthdays.
Kingdom. His birthday presents.
Okay. Yep.
Just the level of anxiety he's building up, and how you saw from the beginning how everyone kind of rejected him, how much he's had to fight to do a good job, and always doubting himself for good reason. He doesn't know. He has to lean on the support of others. The proof that what he's actually doing matters, and that he actually is a good ruler, and that people do care, and he actually has positively influenced others. It touched my heart. I loved that.
You, yeah.
I loved that scene. And just, it's the reminiscing moments of all the things that, like, the good things he's done, even during his short rule.
Mm.
I also cried during the confrontation of Setharus's wife. When Setharus's wife comes to Maya and tries to ask for him, like, hey, you keep separating yourself from Setharus. I know you may, like, you may be off with him, but why are you pushing him away? Why can't you give him a better position? Mm. And Maya just lays into her of building up everything, like describing all the like actual torturous things Setharus has done, the cruelty that he pushed onto Maya. And then like showing how much rage he's built up, but tempered that with, it's his mercy. The fact that he is emperor and he could have him executed, but he doesn't. He just wants him away. And like, he hasn't gone that far as forgiving him, but he doesn't want to let the rage control him. Just him going into the details of how he was tortured was brutal. And then also just saying that to the wife of the man who did. Dude, there's a unique scenario of, like, it's one thing to, you know, the character who has risen, overcome, and then like laying into the person that tortured him, like, that you've seen that before. It was something different about laying it into like the wife of the person who
was oblivious to it,
mm-hmm. to it, and didn't realize how cruel her husband actually was to him. I think that was just brutal scene for me. And lastly, just a scene I very much enjoyed was Maya and, I'm gonna butcher the name, I'm sorry, Setharo, I believe, the fiance.
Okay.
So Maya is at this party with his first and really only friend, and the dancer, her name being the singer, Vechin, Vechin, V-E-C-H-I-N, I think. So Vechin is talking with him. He's infatuated with her. He has a crush on her. And his fiance, Setharo, comes up to him and says, like, you know she's using you, right? And Maya just, I'll pull out the quote. This is the time for it. He was surprised when she said bluntly, Serenity, Minvention is using you. Of course she is, Maya agreed. Dashaman Saradin's eyebrows shot upward, and Maya was unable to keep his bitterness pent decently behind his teeth. How stupid you must believe us to be, to think we are unable to discern that for ourselves. We thank you. She looked as if she'd been bitten by a cushion. Which, interesting. Serenity, we did not mean... She stopped herself, and he watched as her colorless skin flushed to crimson red. I love that scene of it. That is one of the key moments of kindness is not being... It's not naive to be kind. He's not an idiot. He's not... like, yeah, he acknowledges, like, yeah, I do have a crush on her, but, like, she is being kind to me. I am appreciating that kindness. I know she's using, but, like, I see that. But I'm surrounded by vipers. I get to choose the nice viper if I want to. Like, it, there's just something so lovely in that scene of him finally kind of standing up for himself, not bowing down to everyone around him. I enjoyed that greatly.
Did you like the... I said cozy fantasy, but did you enjoy that? It's cozy, but not sunshine and rainbows cozy. It's very, maybe, yeah. Yeah, it's the main character, Maya. Is that how it pronounces
his name? I believe it's Maya. Yeah.
The main character, Maya, he has this, again, you'd think he'd be naive, but he does have a backbone and it shows throughout the book. And so for you, the cathartic moments are when he does show the backbone or shows he's not dumb. He's that it, an example in that scene is he's very aware. He's not just naive.
From the very beginning, Maya is ignorant, but he's not stupid. He, of course, he wouldn't know all of the, you know, mm-hmm. all the different political sides. He doesn't know all the noble families. He doesn't know the state of noble affairs. Like, he's just not aware. He's been out of the loop. He's been out in the countryside for his whole mm-hmm. life. So, of course, he is ignorant of facts of the matter, but he's not an idiot.
Yeah.
He knows when to listen to others, when to take advice, when to learn. He studies hard. Like, he's an actual really smart individual that knows when to listen to others,
mm-hmm.
and people keep thinking that because he's ignorant, that he's stupid. And I love when he proves them wrong. That it's a cathartic moment for me in this book. And it happens several times.
Yeah, that's recurring. Yeah.
It's a recurring moment, mm-hmm. but that was one of the earlier moments that I really enjoyed.
I can see that. Yeah. Well, what did you think was, you said you didn't like the coup stuff.
Yeah, both of them. They were, as far as plot-wise.
Plot-wise, yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. We'll get into that later. But yeah, those did not do it for me.
Yeah, this book for me too was... I didn't have a bad time reading this. It was more definitely the payoff was pretty low for me overall. And again, depends which part you're talking about, because the stuff done with Maya, not so bad, but with like the coup solution or like the answer to everything. And I remember the one long letter we get from the investigators. Mm-hmm. Like, here's all the information. We found out there's this cult that worships this god, and the god thinks that man created God. And it connects it back to the whole coup plot that you get into that's kind of just shoe-fisted at the end of the book. I didn't feel the payoff, but also I kind of caught on early of what to expect from the book. I guess I didn't expect a bombastic finale
mm-hmm.
because the tone of the book already was, hey, we're doing, and I joke around with the meetings all the time, yeah. but it is a book of meetings. It's
meetings
and discussions. And that's why I used a derogatory Z word. And so throughout the book, you're getting discussions about building a bridge or not building a bridge. You're getting discussions about, okay, let's investigate into the wisdom of the.
What are you talking about?
The ship that.
Describe it.
The ship that.
Oh, the airship.
The wisdom of. Man, I can't
believe. Wisdom of Serenity?
No, Serenity's
the title, the ruler's name.
I'm sorry, I didn't write that down. Wisdom, the wisdom ship. Yeah, sorry. Sure. Finding out into the airship of what happened to the family. So like that whole plot thread, just it wasn't too super satisfying.
I had some thoughts. Yeah. I didn't like it during, but there is a silver lining on reflection of the plot.
Yeah.
Of it does fit well into the theme of there was no need to like unearth some great plot because of how Maya deals with people. He was, you know, cutting off the Tethamar family.
Yep.
He's cutting them off at every turn just because he was being kind. And because he was doing things in a competent way, he was just cutting off all these different avenues of approach. And that, like, he wasn't even trying. And he was actually foiling them the entire time. But they're finally left with, like,
we got hoodwinked. We just got to try to kill this guy.
We just got to try to kill him. And so there's something nice to that, yeah, of he doesn't even need to unearth it. He just needs to be a good ruler, and it kind of solves itself.
Yeah, again, not expecting some bombastic end. The whole thing is, yeah, I don't even know if cozy's the right term. I guess so. But yeah, what do you think the emotion was going for in the book? What's the undertone of what's supposed to hit? Because you cried a couple times. Is there...
I think it's a very emotional story with I feel the pressure of Maya. I'm putting, I feel his anxiety. I feel his great need to do, his need to actually he doesn't really even care to prove people wrong. It's not out of spite. He is just feels this great weight of responsibility and wants to do the right job. And I do like the switch of there comes a point of when someone is put upon response, doesn't want the job, is put into responsibility, doesn't want it, but is reluctantly doing the job. Because that's in the beginning, he's kind of like going, hey, if I don't become emperor, I'm just going to get killed in some back alley. It's more about a survival. And then realizing that he actually cares about the responsibility he's been held. And he doesn't want to give up power now because he believes now, growing to the point where he believes he's actually the best person for the job. And knowing that if it wasn't for him, if someone else took it, would they care as much as him? Would they actually care about the little guy? He knows they wouldn't. And so I just love that change of that noble leadership and how that's evolved in him. Absolutely lovely. So I felt the pressure.
Feeling anxiety is one emotion.
Anxiety, the catharsis and release when, Maya proves him wrong. Mm-hmm. It's always great. I was also just intrigued with the politics stuff. I liked getting into the different family politic and how Maya is solving things. Just even one of the early scenes of him getting a letter and realizing that she addressed him in this, sub-hierarchy. He's now the new emperor and she's still referring to him as...
The emperor's wife.
Yeah.
Now widowed. Right?
Now widowed, but still referring to him as, this child and not actually addressing him as emperor and going, oh crap, I actually need to choose my new name as emperor to offshoot. All this fun stuff. I enjoyed the hell out of all that.
It's funny what hit different because for me, still the standout is Idra going, mom, what the hell are you doing? This is such, I kind of liked it too because Idra pointed out how stupid of a plan it is.
Yeah. I liked Idra. Idra's a great development of character.
Yeah.
Maya doing a good job of being kind to Idra and trying to build, knowing that he's the heir, hey, I need to actually develop a relationship with him, and it bearing fruit in that scene. Again, fighting coups with kindness. Fighting coops with kindness, yes.
Anything else for emotion?
Yeah, it nearly floored me. These characters sucked me into this world, and I loved it.
Want to go to thought provokingness?
Yeah.
All right. What'd you give thought provokingness out of 5?
5 stars. Absolutely floored me. This is the one that got you. Yes. This is the book. This is the example I'm going to hand to people, and that deserves a 5.
I give it a 3 neutral.
Oof. What? I was talking a lot about it in emotional impact to some degree.
Yeah. Let's identify the themes.
Sure.
Okay. Biggest theme to encapsulate is. Build bridges.
Build bridges. Don't.
Yeah. Don't
destroy.
Don't destroy. Don't build walls. Build bridges. Essentially, yes. Is the message. Extend. Be kind. Lend out a hand. And that's kind of encapsulated. You see at the very last chapter, which I've read now 3 hours ago. It's fresh in the head, or however many hours ago it was, where he's talking about Maya the bridge builder, and he's thinking about, man, he even regrets not extending a hand to Sethrus, and he kind of regrets that not going well, or with Shavar as well, the Lord Chancellor. He's just saying, man, and all the scenes throughout the story emphasize, yes, build bridges.
Yep.
That's the biggest thing. And then there's other stuff to get into there.
But it's also, it's more complicated than that.
Is that the overarching message, you think?
That is the overarching message. I just like how well, the reason why I'm floored by this is how well that is handled.
It's all about execution.
That's not a novel. That's not a novel concept, and can be done in a very naive way of just kind of all kumbaya, just pure hey, as long as you're kind to others, others will be kind to you. It's not that. this book doesn't.
Hey, man.
It's more of like, hey, it's incumbent on you to try to build. Like, it is important for you to try to build bridges, but be wise enough to understand when someone else wants to burn the bridge and like not trying to overcome that. Like, sometimes the bridge is burnt. It's not your fault that every bridge is burnt, but it is still important for you to try to build the bridges. Mm. Like, there's a difference. And so you do have to, there's several moments of Maya's mercy does have to go only so far. He doesn't spare everyone. Like, hey, his assassin, his guard that tries to kill him, he feels sad about it that the guard has to, you know, go through an execution. But he understands how important it is. Like, no, he did betray the emperor. There's all these little lines of like, no, justice does need to come. You can't just give mercy to everyone. Being kind to everyone is not always enough, but sometimes it is. And it's important to do that anyway and not become jaded just because, you know, one bridge, one connection is burnt doesn't mean you spurn everyone. Just because one family, like the family line with Chevian, like, yeah, that bridge is burnt, but it's still incumbent on you. Like, it's still important for him to reach out to Idra. Like, don't burn that bridge too.
Yep.
I like that. I like that little subtlety.
That motif just through all of them, yeah.
It's not assuming that all you need is kindness and just blind kindness. That
blind kindness is that more ignorant.
Yes, exactly. And this is not that. That's why I liked how this
tactful kindness or
Kindness coupled with wisdom and
prudence, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kindness and prudence, and they are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah. There's a quote, I pulled just one out here, of when Maya is talking about the punishment given to those who wronged him. Okay. In our inmost and secret heart, would you ask us to bear you? We wish to banish them. Talking about banishing the coups, I believe, in the scene. In our inmost and secret heart, which you ask us to bear to you, we wish to banish them as we were banished, to a cold and lonely house in the charge of a man who hated us, and we wish them trapped there as we were trapped. You consider that unjust, Serenity? We consider it cruel, Maya said, and we do not think that cruelty is ever just. And kind of showing all these things of, you know, the eye for an eye thing, that cruelty is not justified just because somebody's cruel to you. The ends, not just the ends that justify the means. It's just what is that phrase called of
an eye for an eye will make the world, whole world blind.
Not that one, but basically that one. But the treat others as you want to be treated. I was looking for the golden
the
rule.
Golden
I don't know
rule.
Why I couldn't think of the golden rule, but yes, this one does do it. It's very wholesome, cozy, and by the end, I could see you making a real good feel good message with it as well. Yeah. And this is your example book for the building bridges, basically. Of
building bridges, of noble leadership.
Don't go to look at this book that's just like, be kind. This is be kind, but deeper than that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I truly enjoy about it. However many stories about the noble king, it's just a lot of it is, it seemingly is just naive, ignorant, and therefore they're kind and things just kind of work out. This one goes a little bit deeper and shows that's not just, oh, things happen to work out for him. Like, things work out directly due to his kindness, and in a logical way, it makes sense. But also him being able to show prudence, understand that justice still is important. You can't just, mercy is a virtue as long as it is tempered with justice. I appreciate that in this story. But yeah, how you should handle responsibility is also really well handled in this book. I love that theme as well.
And him and his crew with Savet and
Talked about?
Savet is his right hand man, basically.
Secretary.
And then what's the crew that he?
The guards.
Yes.
The guards.
One starts with a B.
Beshalar and Kala.
And Kala, yes. Him and his crew and how he treats them, how that comes back full circle as well. Yes. Okay. I see why I touched you.
Because even that, his friendship with Beshalar and Kala starts off where he becomes very friendly with them and then pushed off to, hey, look, you're our leader, you're our king. We can't actually be friends with you. We're your guards. We're supposed to die for you. Mm-hmm. And by the end, he go, it's not a full like, screw that rule. Like, we can all be friends. It's a little bit different of, hey, look, can we be the same kind of friendship that you have with your fellow guards? No, we can't. You're right. The hierarchy that is in place, like, it is, that is true. Our relationship is not going to be the same. However, that doesn't mean we have to deny the complete, disconnect of emotion, the emotional connection between us. We can still be friendly. We can still be a type of friends, even if it isn't the same. I appreciate that as well. Of just,
yeah.
Again, prudence with kindness. Lovely.
This is the opposite of Grimdark in many ways.
Yes.
It's Noble Bright. Or Noble Bright. Yes.
Noble Bright.
Yes.
I'm a big fan.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe you like cozy fantasy a lot too. Maybe it's a subgenre in general. Yeah. Anything else on themes and that
you want to explore? Those are some of the bigger ones. But also I think a big one here is forgiveness. And what does it mean to forgive? Again, this is done in many books, but I appreciate how it's done here. Mm. Of how he can't necessarily forgive Setharus. He tries to. And the best he can do is try to let go of the hate, let go of the anger. He can't ever go to, like, he can't be friends with Setharus. It's never going to happen. But he can try to let go of the anger, let go of that hate. Don't let it control him, even though it does to a significant degree. So he has to push Setharus away. It's a bridge he has to burn, even if it's a weakness of his. But yeah, that.
So it's like building bridges. Then to addendum that, is it building bridges when it's smart?
Yeah, but it's. Thing is, I even by the end of the book, he wish he could have. Mm-hmm. And it's more a weakness in him of like, not, oh, I should have done that. It's not illogical. He knows that emotionally speaking, he couldn't. His weakness is that he couldn't build that bridge. But that's just how it is. He couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something to regret, not to... something to be proud of, I guess.
Yeah. So his flaw there, which we're getting ahead with characters. Anything else with themes, or it's your example book.
Yeah. Also, it's the last one that is important. I mentioned in emotional impact was noble leadership of how responsibility changes of the arc of Maia's story is starting off of taking the throne because he doesn't want to die. He knows that if I don't take this throne, if I don't succeed, I'm going to be just executed after someone else takes the throne. I know that's good. So it's all about survival at first and evolving to taking the responsibility seriously and then going beyond that of not wanting to give up the power, not wanting to give up the throne and the responsibility it holds. Because you know that you're the best one for the job and truly believe, not in an arrogant way, but seeing the examples around you going like, I care a lot about the responsibility of this. I care that this job is done well. And the only way I can guarantee that job is done well is if I do it myself. That's leadership. That's the right type of leader you want. You want that leader. And this is my example. Like, yes, this person, it's done in.
You like, I that like this it. Book is so pro monarchy, but like you find yes. You get a good monarch.
Good monarch. I love.
I understand why this is your favorite. I see because you think democracy is cringe. You're like, oh, look, here's an example of a good monarch. Monarchy.
Do this.
See, I get it now.
Okay. I understand.
I get. Well, you're reading this going, finally, someone who's so pro getting rid of the democratic process. Oh, you're so, it's so twisted. Look at you. Yeah, for for the building bridges theme, I think it was executed like it was logically because all of the scenes that happen do support that recurring theme. I think I picked up on what the theme was. Most people probably did, of, you know, from the get go of, okay, I get this is a book about a kind emperor that is going to rule well via kindness. So it was more so showing
not letting the power corrupt him.
Yeah, not letting the power corrupt him. I was curious to see like how tempted will he get by the power and by Sethrus. I thought maybe it was going to go down an avenue of he realizes he gets put in this position of power and he's this wouldn't have been more cozy fantasy, obviously, but he sees how this power corrupts and he starts to think more twistedly like Sethrus. Or he starts to understand more why someone like Sethrus abused him, or maybe exploring back to his childhood and finding out like that something about the position of power, how does it corrupt, what does it do, but why is he particularly immune to it or able to fight back? I would have loved more there for me. Maybe I was looking for something more deeper, and which we can get into for a character arc possibly, but I think that scene between the him and Sethrus relationship was the thing I was like tied to the most as well. That was my emotional investment was highest with them. We get to know like, okay, from the get go, this guy's abusing you and now you're in a position of power. How you treat him says a lot about our main character, Maya. So I would have wanted to see maybe more about what is the corrupting, what does a position of power do to someone that's kind? And
I think this book rejects the worldview, the idea that absolute power corrupts absolutely, and just the idea that all power is corrupting in general, and more posits the idea that power doesn't corrupt people, but people are either corrupted or not.
Basically,
and
like
power will amplify.
Well,
them.
take somebody that's money magnifies, right? If you're a good person and you make this much money, but then you make more money and all of a sudden you're donating a lot because it's like, that's the person you always were. Now it's just, you have more resources. That's why you donate. Like similar thing of like, hey, what you put yourself in a position of power. You're still the same good person.
Yeah.
Now,
which I thought was an interesting way of all of those scenes where he could have been more corrupted, more in a different story would have been like tempted and like,
it's not the same story. Yeah.
It's not like Maya is good person. He wouldn't do these type of things. It struggles. He has these internal dark thoughts, but he knows he keeps that inside of him. He doesn't let that out. He doesn't let the secret cruelty he may want to. He doesn't let that actually corrupt him. That every negative thought people have doesn't, just because you have a negative thought doesn't mean you actually want to do it. You're not always just restricted by your ability in the world.
What I was hoping for was he's such an empathetic person and like, so understanding of others. I expected him to see Sethrus and like have such a building of the bridge in that sense that he like, this gets it maybe a twisted way of looking at it, but he even empathizes for the mentality Sethrus had for abusing him. Like getting deeper into, because Sethrus came across as like he was kicked out of his father's entourage, basically, because he wasn't a traitor, but he tried to manipulate things. He gets kicked out. I would have hoped for something more with Maya looking at Sethrus and just understanding his childhood understanding Sethrus's point of view to the point where, you know how he regrets not building a bridge with Sethrus, essentially, like kind of shrugging that off. I would have loved their relationship, something to happen there rather than him being the one that's brushed off, because I think Sethrus was the easy one to not build the bridge with. He does acknowledge that at the end, but I would have found it much more compelling, because this whole kindness thing, like how do you show kindness more than to the person who is the worst to you? You're growing up. So I think it misses the mark on that, like that kindness theme, because that, like, that is the relation. The holidays are coming up fast, and it's time to shop, but actually have some fun doing it.
Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
On uncommongoods.com, they provide art, games, books, DIY kits, home accents, and all sorts of accessories. What makes them unique is that about half of their assortment is handmade by independent artists and artisans.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. For moms, dads, teens, from book lovers to history buffs, to anyone who hit their quarter-life crisis and started running marathons.
Excuse me. Okay, well, that's my better half, Nicole. She's one of those marathon runners, and I got her a gift from the site. I ordered this custom metal holder for all the races she completes, where there's also a place to put her personal records on there. I'd never seen custom-built case like this before, and so I got her the gift, and I'm gonna surprise her with it.
Yeah. Hey, every time you purchase something from Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Also, every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/2toramble. That's uncommongoods.com/2toramble for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Relationship I'm interested in. And it's easy. He chooses the easier kindness, in my view. Like, he's kind to all, like, the people that are less worse to him. The way to, like, magnify that the most of who are you as a person, Cethrus. And so for that to be the one that's dropped off, I was like, that's where I was more let down. I'm like, that's what I needed to, like, think about this book longer. So that's where I'm coming from.
I'm going the different direction of, like, I kind of seen that. Like, the ultimate, you know, Jesus-level kindness of, like, be ultimately kind to even the worst people to you. And to me, that, yeah, it's an extreme, but I think it's almost
less relevant.
But in a day to day, that it's an extreme to make a point. I think it's more realistic, and the reason why I liked the character is that is a flaw to him. He can't get over that.
Well,
he can't
get over then?
Characters.
Okay, if characters, I give a 3.5, good. Like, I just think good, yeah.
4.25, really great.
And keep going. What were you just saying? Yeah.
Basically, the whole idea that it is a flaw to him, but he can't get past the emotional trauma that it is quite literally triggering around him when Cethrus is in front of him. He keeps being pulled back to these moments. Like, he can't actually be himself around Cethrus. It's a physical thing to him. He can't get over it. And the best he can do, the best level of kindness, is just be away from me. Literally tortured me, and I'm not going to do anything to you. I'm not going to throw you in prison. I'm not going to kill you. Like, I have all the power to do whatever I want to you. My kindness is just go away. Please, for the love of God, separate yourself.
I'm sparing you. I'm not killing you.
I am not killing you. You have tortured me. My kindness is I am doing nothing to you. Like, just leave. And that's the best he could do. And again, it's at the beginning of the book. And by the end, he sees how many bridges he has built. And he regrets, like, maybe I could try to be better. It's something to improve on.
Yep.
But the important factor is not letting that cruelty that happened to you to turn that onto others.
Right.
And to turn it around. I think that's more, I think it was more of an interesting point in this book.
I think it makes for a good character. I liked Maya's character quite a bit.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I've seen that story of the character that's, I've seen the story of the character that is so kind, even super kind to the person that is directly cruel to him. It's extreme to make the point of kindness is good. But you get into the actual practical problems of, like, don't let people keep hurting you. You do have, like, great to be kind, but you do have to stop people that are actively trying to hurt you. And so, like, that's something. But then the other story of trauma, negative experience, all these, you know, cruelty begets cruelty. And so someone is cruel to you, and so therefore it twists you, and you are cruel to others. I like that the story doesn't do that of, because people were cruel to him, he knows not to do it to others. That pain was a lesson to him.
But that lesson, though, is learned from the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. Like where, I guess what I'm saying is the more interesting story to me would have been if that lesson happens within the book rather than off page.
Sure. I mean, it's just the reverse of like, Maya is right. Maya's right. Mm. He has to teach the kingdom that lesson. He teaches that like the people around him, and it's proving that he's right. That's the book.
Yeah. Goblin Emperor. He's not wrong. He's nice.
He's not wrong. Everyone else is wrong. Mm. And he is going to prove them. He's going to prove himself right.
Yeah, it makes for a good character, but just less to think about for me.
Oh, I guess I think about it a lot. I like those examples.
Yeah, of I guess with Maya's character, what do you think his, quote-unquote flat character, but that doesn't mean bad character. Just he is a kind person. He was abused as a kid, and his mom, Chanello, was put into this marriage with the emperor. How do you dissect Maya's character of being a long-standing? What'd you give again? 4.5 or
characters 4.25.
Yeah. Why does he stand out so much?
Well, we talked a little bit about how a character that was abused as a child, separated from everyone, and has all the reasons to be cruel to others or to get revenge, or Not even to go that far, but just have that spiteful feeling and this like twisted, like, oh, I won, happy that his father is dead. And to some degree, he doesn't mourn his father, but he's not dancing on the grave of like, haha, father, I won, I became king over you. It's not that. I appreciate that perspective. I like seeing a kind character given power and how they operate.
Yeah, instead of naming the new bridge after his father, he's naming it after the ship, so they can mourn everybody and not just his father.
Yeah. And again, it's another little bridge. He knows he can't mourn his father, and it pains him to do so.
Mm.
But he knows other people cared about his father. So this is the bridge, but like, okay.
Building another bridge,
You all can actually still mourn my father, but like it's relevant, but I will be mourning everyone on that airship. Yeah, no, it's I loved Maya's struggles, and I loved following him through all these little moments. It was important to me.
Yeah, Maya was the standout, obviously, and he Idris, I'm telling you, Idris was one of my favorite characters in this. I loved Idris. He was great.
I understand why you didn't like the book so much.
Oh, you don't like Idris?
No, he was fine. Oh. I'm neutral on him.
Oh.
I
thought Idris was awesome.
Yeah, well, you were on three on the book. It makes sense. Like, I'm like, yeah, he's a three character. I get it. He's
no, I liked him more than that.
Okay.
Oh, I'm trying to.
Why do you like him so much?
I'm trying to join in the joy for you.
I'm happy. Let raise my score.
I was raising a bridge to be like, look, there's something
you're trying
in the
to
book.
Build a bridge.
There's something in the book I like, and you need to learn from Maya.
I do. I'm just a wicked person.
It's like, look, I like that. No,
no. I was just trying to. I didn't understand why you liked him as much. So, what do you like so much about him?
Well, I like that he's like the. You know how you're saying you like the whole thought provoking thing. It's instead of what you'd expect of the person who's learns from this cruelty from Sethrys and all of a sudden like is also cruel back or is just obliviously kind. You're kind for kindness sake, all that kind of stuff. You're like, you've seen it before. I feel like how many times have you seen the Prince Joffrey character? It's just a little dickwad that is so evil and petulant because they were raised with all sorts of just the most amount of privilege and wealth, et cetera, that you can possibly have. You see all those little princes. And you see this Idris character who foils his own mother's plan.
To make him king.
To make him king. Of like literally the kingdom is right at the palm of his hands as his mom is doing it. And it's just that little scene showed the disconnect between him and his mother. His mother didn't understand him well enough to know he would say no. And just that alone, I was going like, wow. Okay, the mom is that in her head, and Idris is... That's part of it too. Like Maya's super kind. Idris just is kind. He seems like an upstanding kid too. Like 14-year-old. He'd also make a good monarch. There's monarchs everywhere here. There's just great people.
Well, also, now this is a plot issue too. But
yeah,
the whole coup attempt itself is dumb. Like these are very incompetent people. Like the main thing with Idris is like him looking at this whole thing, going, yes, I don't want to become I think this is morally wrong. I'm standing up against you, mother. There's the good aspect of it. But he also went to, this is a terrible plan.
Yeah.
This is awful.
I like that he acknowledged that. Like, going, look at this.
This is an awful plan.
This does not work.
This is not going to work. What do you expect to happen after this? This is terrible. Terrible idea. Like, just as far as coups go, not the best idea, Mom.
Yes.
Not the best one.
Yes.
Could have done better.
Ezer is cute, yeah. But what about, you got Sevet, Kala, Setharis, and Shavar.
Sethro, the fiancé. I enjoyed the budding romance as it grew. That was a very enjoyable time. I think their budding relationship was very enjoyable.
Yes.
So I like the little romance there. Same thing with Maya's relationship with Vetchin. His crush on her and how she uses him, but then just the back and forth of that relationship was really well done as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I like all of these little moments. What about
Alvar, his grandpa? We see him a lot toward the end of the book.
I liked him well enough. It was interesting to see him, and just the little bit of bitterness there of Maya knows that, you know, this is the person who sent his mother away to his father, and all the cruelty that happens there, and ultimately that he never wrote back. His mother wrote to her father and tried to reach out and got no help in return. Yeah. So he's like, hey, great. Yep. It's nice to be around grandpa, but yeah, you abandoned my mother. I'm not going to let that one slip by. I'm not going to just forget about that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, but their relationship is interesting. And definitely the interesting dynamic there. He's definitely larger than life.
Maya reminded me of one of my favorite characters in fiction is Waymond from Everything Ever All At Once. Remember Waymond? I won't give away spoilers for anybody, but Waymond is also a kind character. And so I see the appeal. Man, that's also just one of my favorite movies ever, Everything Ever All At Once. So
yeah,
a bit biased there. But this Maya character, I see. So getting to the specific thing is, you like that he is kind, but not just for kindness' sakes. He's prudent about it and thoughtful. And the people that he is, maybe this is the thing too, but the people that he's doesn't like or is mean to, he doesn't respond with cruelty. He responds with get away from me. He responds with like cutting off or keeping a distance, not responding with anger or wrath, but rather with I'll fight higher than that. Like, I'll be the better person is essentially what he does.
Yeah. Or just knowing, trying to build bridges, but knowing when it's not going to work. And sometimes like, hey, you could focus your attention on other bridges. It's being smart about it effectively.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And
you just like seeing that, a competent
seeing a competent, kind ruler. That is enjoyable to me.
Yeah. Good. Anything else for characters?
Mostly other characters I think were all really well done. The only characters that didn't do it for me was specifically, I want to get the name right.
Who's the person?
Chavar, the Chancellor.
Yeah.
I wish I had more there. He's just kind of incompetent and not even that cruel, but just incompetent and unwilling to change and unwilling to. Yeah, it's just ignorant guy. That's basically it. And then I like Chevian more of them. Like, her relationship with her son, Idra, is better. And I enjoyed that aspect. And then Tethamar. All right, they're villains.
The villains didn't shine here.
No,
but
the villains did not
shine.
That's
part of the point, it's Maya's book. So.
Yes. So they're fine, but that's why not that much higher.
All right, then what'd you give plot out of 5 stars? So this
plot
is your lowest.
3.75. I think it's still a really good plot. The problem, I do have just two problems with the plot, and they're...
Coup stuff, yeah.
The coup stuff.
I gave it a 2.75, below average.
I don't even completely dislike everything about the coup.
Mm-hmm.
It's the endings of it. The fact that the first coup attempt with Chevian and Chavar is just... they abduct him in the middle of the night and go like, oh, you're going to abdicate. Okay. That's totally going to work. Like, one, just the fact that they think they have minutes going of like, how do you expect to get away with this? And you're surrounded by guards and just dumb. They're dumb as hell. They just how they expected that one to work. So I didn't like that as a plot detail. And then Tethamar's whole plan of he was so smart planning out this whole execution of the previous emperor, planning out this like working with this cult, and all, like the plan to take out the previous emperor is very, very smart. And then also smart on top of that, that the bomb maker, the person who did take out the previous emperor, foiled the Tethamar plan deliberately to actually bring about a better monarch. Like, all of it was well calculated, like, ooh, interesting. And then Tethamar is just, like, bragging to his friends at a party of, like, yeah, I'm gonna get him. It's like, oh, you better be nice to me when I'm emperor, and then just tries to run up to Maya and just stab him when he's surrounded by guards and magicians. It's like, that's a dumb plan. I don't know how he thought that was going to work for a guy who's supposedly pretty smart. That was pretty dumb. I didn't like that. I would change those.
What did you like?
Everything else.
Okay, everything besides those.
I liked all the plot little details. I love all the little moments throughout everything of how everything looped together at the end with the bridge. Plot moment for moment, as far as that goes. Enjoyed it. It all tied together.
Nice. What was your favorite Zoom meeting? But to be fair, though, the meetings that he would run into, when the book first started, when did you recognize that the plot was going to be that? That him just ruling as emperor and going scene to scene. Did you know that before reading it? Okay.
Coop told me of like
that what was your to expectations. Expect. Yeah.
There are no battles. It is meetings. He takes the entire book is meetings in the palace.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the throne. That's what it is.
Yeah, I wasn't told it, but I think I recognized it like by part two. Somewhere in part two. Are you checking a quote or getting something?
Yeah, I was trying to get one basically a moment of a plot moment in this detail kind of sums up of this was a moment when Maya is delegating. He has grievances brought to him and he's trying to delegate to decide what the right thing to do is.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he remembered the moment when his thoughts had inverted themselves, that shift from not being able to please everyone to not trying, and the way that change had enabled him to see past the maneuverings and the histrionics of the representatives to the deeper structures of the problems. It was the same with the Khorezars. It's those building up, like how he had to learn that lesson of all the political maneuvering, all these little plot details, getting lost in the weeds and then like looking, take a step back for the trees, missing the trees for the leaves. Oh.
Your stars and moon thing that you always try to.
I always fail for it.
Flip it up.
What is it? Shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll be among the stars.
No, again, it's shoot for the stars. And you'll hit the moon, mate. Now I'm not.
No,
sure.
I got it right this time.
Am I gaslighting you?
Are you gaslighting me already?
No, it's shoot for the stars.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, shoot for the moon. Because even if you miss, you'll be among the stars.
No, it's shoot for the stars. Even if you miss, you'll hit the moon.
No. Yes. One, that doesn't even make sense. Yes, if you're aiming for the stars, like the stars are a bigger target than the moon.
No.
It's hard to hit the moon.
Here's why it makes sense.
Even if you miss, you hit the stars.
You're telling me it's shoot for the moon?
It's shoot for the moon.
What? I have the internet.
Go ahead. I'm right.
Is it shoot for the moon or shoot for the stars? This is what it is. Here's the phrase. You ready? Shoot for the stars, but if you happen to miss, shoot for the moon instead.
That's not it.
Literally, that's what AI just did. It says both phrases are used to encourage ambition, but the more famous complete version is shoot for the stars, but if you happen to miss, shoot for the moon instead. This quote, often attributed to Neil Armstrong, suggests setting an extremely high goal, the stars, then setting slightly more attainable, still ambitious secondary goal, the moon. That's what it says.
It's dumb. Neil Armstrong is dumb, apparently. I learned something new today.
Oh, okay.
So I like my phrase better.
You never hear shoot for the stars?
I do know shoot for the stars. I get that one. I'm just saying, like, the whole comparison of, like, aim big, because even if you miss, you'll... It's the poetic nature of that phrase.
Yes. That's what it is. Anyways. Okay. The plot moments for me, yeah, I agree. The whole crew stuff was unsatisfying, and not even just the scene where Tethamars and they go to try to kill Maya, but even the setup for how we get the information, like the letter coming from the wisdom about the airship, and the letter we get, and that kind of info dump of, okay, here's all the information that you need so that we can help solve this mystery. So the mystery itself wasn't that engaging, and why the overall plot didn't work as much for me is the whole thing. Some of my favorite stuff does happen in one room. 12 Angry Men is all in one room. But this definitely did feel like just a recurring going into different meetings. And some of the plot points, I didn't think anything was bad. It's just weird when I had nothing positive or negative to say, really. It's just the plot did move. And maybe here's where I could extend and build my bridge is the Idris stuff. I mean, that was...
I mean, I'm glad you liked Deidre. I'm very happy for you.
No, let me try to
it's just so low on my priority list. That's the thing you're hanging on to. I'm going like,
damn, what else? Okay. What other branch do we have? Like, because
that,
I guess when,
that's pretty low on the branches. Yeah. But okay.
Okay. When it comes to the main plot of, I guess, his Maya and Maya ruling. Okay, that's the A plot. B plot is finding out the wisdom, what happened to the airship, or what about the bridges situation.
Yeah.
The incoming emperor, his grandpa coming in town. You have all those subplots, and the overarching one is, how does he solve all this with his kindness? Maybe I'm just repeating myself, but maybe it'll bring some conversation up. I don't know. Okay. It's tough when you go middling with these ratings, because I would love to be passionately against this book or four. I would love to. But, okay. Yeah, I guess when it comes... I had a point I was making. I got to walk back on my bridge. Where was I in this head? Him and treating everything with kindness. I think it's sometimes with these type of books or stories when... Not that predictability or being able to solve it is the end of the world, but just when going back to the motifs of the... Oh, bless you. Oh, yeah, never mind.
I almost did.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Good. But...
I saved it.
The more, like, I got the point of the book very early on, and the book didn't... I'm overthinking it a bit, but not that the book has to subvert you, but I got the point of the book early on, and I was waiting for something to happen in the book that changed the pace of what my enjoyment is, because I got it from the get-go, and now he's going to keep treating people with kindness, and that's why I was kind of pushing more for maybe a character arc or maybe something that puts a foil in his thought of how to rule, just maybe something interesting to happen in the plot. Just for me, it was lack of interest. When it came to his character, was well done. Just the plot that was happening to him and the politicking didn't.
His character arc was
me.
Far more associated with confidence
yeah.
and responsibility, and that's mainly it. He is the right person to rule, and him learning by the end that
he's the lesson.
His confidence going, no, I do deserve to rule. I'm not going to cower behind it. I'm not going to apologize again for my position. I will be a good ruler, and I'm not going to apologize for it.
Yeah.
That is it. Yeah, that's his arc, his confidence in his leadership.
So just when I'm looking at the plot, it's like, okay, the plot happens to him, and he does cause the plot because he's the kind person. It's just that I can't think of all... I'm breaking down the subplots, the coup stuff, the building of bridges, and the talking with the advisors of whether they should build the bridge or not build the bridge. That specific stuff is it. All the subplots are just there. And then the overall thing to get behind is, do you like seeing somebody that's confident, that treats people kindly?
Yeah.
And that's the plot.
I loved all the little moments, the little plot, the subplots of his relationship with the different noble families and how he works around them, how he has to learn how they operate. The subplot with his the one noble lady that treated him kindly, him and Janella during his mother's funeral. Touching scene. It's enjoyable to see that, and just him learning over time. And if you're to give a plot, you know, MVP of the story, really is Shevet, the secretary.
Oh yeah.
Without Shevet, like, Maya's toast. Doesn't matter how he is. Like,
who was Kunigaro in Grace of Kings? Remember his
right hand
man. I forget his friend's name. But.
Oh god, yeah, no, but he. Without him, everyone's toast.
Yes.
Yeah, no, Shevet is that guy. He knows everything. He is competent and also loyal. And Maya's just like, I'd be lost without you.
Yeah,
I need you. It's like, yeah, it's true. It's lovely. It's a good. I was so sure that he was going to make Shevet the new chancellor. You know what I mean? Like, but he did dodge, like, I would make you the new chancellor, but I kind of need you as my assistant. I am lost without you.
You're better here.
Right here. I need you setting meetings.
Yes. Because
you know everyone and everything somehow.
Shevet's great. He knows what he's doing.
If there's any Deus Ex Machina character, it is Shevet. Like, nothing moves forward without him. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess plot-wise, it just tastes interesting of how many times can I get the point he's kind. So for me, it's just more dull because I get it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a bit, like, it's just a different style of it's not a character learning a lesson. It's not or it's not primarily that. It's proving the world a lesson. Like,
culminating in the happy Maya birthday scene. Everyone says happy birthday to him.
Yeah.
They were meaningful. Yeah.
To some degree, that is almost like an ending of sorts for the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the kind of culmination.
The world
everything.
Learns the lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least, you know, Maya knows he's on the right track.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's. I just enjoy that.
And maybe it just bothered me ever so slightly
that
there's a literal bridge they're building.
Yeah.
Like, how much more? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah. Building a bridge. He's a bridge builder. It's great.
Yeah.
What do you want him to not build a bridge?
No, just bang it over my head more. if you didn't get that means he's. Yeah. I hate these. I don't have anything substantive to say other than that. It's just uninteresting to me. But okay. Do you want to go into world building? Because I have positive things to say now.
Okay. That's nice.
4 stars. Great. This is a great world.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah.
4.25 for me. Yeah. Really great.
This was a great. Like, I think the technical quality, because there's a lot of taste involved when it comes to dealing with these characters, where you're emotionally impacted, da-da-da. Mm-hmm. I think the more, quote-unquote, I don't want to say this objective, but when world and prose are higher, you can see it's a technically well-done book. Where I think Goblin Emperor is a technically well-done book, with the world very immersive. You have, the language is a big part of that, because even the words themselves immerse you into the read. And I believe this is a language of its own. I believe these are real people. So that alone allowed me to easily get lost when I was reading this. I was in this boring world. I'm sorry. I'm not burning stuff. Hold on. Fire extinguisher. When I was in this world, I really was immersed. What about you?
Yeah, no, I was immersed in this world. One, it's nice to have a story about elves and goblins and no humans. It's new-ish. I like it. Not every story needs humans. I enjoy that. And they felt distinctly elvish, like, alien-esque. Like, yeah, they humanoid, but they had their own cultures, personalities, like it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt different, and I felt immersion to it. But yeah, you're right. The language itself is the amount of care that went into how scented structure worked, how pronouns, names, noble family names, first, last, all these, whether someone is married or not, how that all functions. Like,
yeah.
That did the lion's share of, like, it was so much work put into that that made this world feel real and alive.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was that, because the world itself, like, you're just in the palace the entire time. That's the world. Like, you get, hey, here's Palace Room A, and here's Palace Room B.
How many times were in that goddamn tortoise room?
We got a lot of tortoise room. Like the tortoise room. Tortoise room's great. It is just the tortoise room. It is a palace room. There's not a lot of spectacle there. But the language itself is the world building.
One of the most important aspects of the world for me was how cultures treated death. It was very cool to see that where the, what were they called? Not the death watchers, but the
witnesses?
Witnesses of the dead. Yeah, the witnesses of the dead and very specific rituals of when there was a traitor. We saw the person who betrayed Maya. His name started with a Z. We know who that character is. Sorry, I can't remember his exact name. But who betrayed Maya and then asks him to be witness for his death. And we see this ritual and there's another, whatever the name of the ritual is, where the person takes a blade and they're supposed to do, I think, 5 cuts, their leg, arm, then their throat. But hardly anybody ever gets to the throat because the amount of blood you're losing by the time you get there. And watching someone die, you just see the cultural and their, the way they treat traitors, the way that they treat death was significant in the story, especially because a lot of the story is focused on the emperor and all those that just die, his mother who's dead. And so death as a big feature of the world building was one of those that kind of zoned in on. That was very cool to, to use your term, not cool, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You're right.
That was another, we just recorded a video before that. I'm mixing up videos.
That's fine.
Okay. that it was neat to see how death was handled in the world, the language itself, the
spirituality and religion on how it just, the added layer of how over time how the state and faith has kind of been separated. So it is unpopular in today's age for the emperor to be devoutly religious and spiritual.
Yes.
And Maya being, half goblin and feeling, wants to kind of buck some traditions of like, hey, I am not my father. I am going to be a different ruler than him.
Mm-hmm.
More embraces his spirituality and his mother's religion. Like, I really enjoyed the scene when before he becomes emperor and he has to spend that time in the cave. I liked that a lot.
Yeah,
it was a calm, peaceful, just moment of reflection moment for him. One, it was also the one moment of calm, like from as soon as it gets to the palace, it's go, 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 go. He does not have a moment's break. Everyone needs his attention for something. It's never stopping. And finally, he gets just be alone with his thoughts for a whole, hour, for a whole day or something. That's enjoyable. The fact that isolation was so invaluable to him. Again, added on to, my feeling of, his anxiety. And then so when I get that pause with him, I'm feeling like, oh, finally a break. And now we have to go back. that's also a great aspect of world building, just the candles and how the different religions operate. So, and then its relationship with the state, how it used to be more tied together and now it's not. Like you're saying, the witnesses for the dead, how they operate like priests, but also like lawyers and investigators. Like the witness for the dead is basically your police investigator, but also it's also not one-to-one. Like there's a type of world building where it's basically something in our world, but they call it something else. Like that's fine, but it's also not as cool as what Goblin Emperor does. It's not a one-to-one. Is the witness for the dead kind of like your investigator? Sure, they're also like a priest, a lawyer. There's something else to it.
Therapist,
like they operate differently. It's not a one-to-one. I can't nail them. I can't nail down
their occupation, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It is. They are a witness.
That's why they're called
witness.
It's different.
They're witnesses.
They're a witness.
They are different.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
It is.
I can't
cool.
nail that.
That
down.
Was my favorite aspect of the world building was how death was handled for sure,
mm-hmm.
and language and your point of the them being only in the palace. But still feeling a big wide world was also cool. We got to see him seeing his grandpa too also helped because we got a little bit of goblin culture versus elf. Well, sure, you've seen goblins and elves before, but this was, I like how it didn't have humans too.
Yeah,
screw the humans in this one.
Who needs them? Just don't need them.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just want a little bit. You just want some goblins and elves. Like,
damn right.
That's fine.
All right, pros. What did you give pros out of 5 stars?
4.25. Really great.
I get 4. Great as well.
Yeah. No.
Not as well. 4. Close. Yes.
Close. Closer. Yeah. Closer to the truth.
Yes.
No, this is a really well done. The prose is expertly done. All the effort that give a lot of the credit in the world building, but the effort to structure this language is incredibly well done. Honestly, you pick a passage and it's just poetry.
It's very dense.
It's dense language.
Yeah.
I enjoyed how this was written. It's a certain style.
Especially because when we're judging these characters, we don't repeat it enough, but what do we mean by our 5, by our 1, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when we're talking about plot to show why we disagree, it's like 5 stars, very few changes to the plot. You gave it 3.75 because, like, oh, you changed some of these, and then 1 star is change everything,
yeah,
right? So when we mean middle of the pack, it means like, change this, right? That's what we mean. When we're talking prose, for example, our 5 stars is irreplaceable prose, mm-hmm, and our 1 star is distracting prose. So when we're saying like the 4.425, this is very unique. It's a type of prose that seems like Catherine Addison.
Mm-hmm.
She has a style that's both, well, is it good? It's also good writing, on top of it being a unique style and worded very well, described very well, versus I could see some people, because our term for 1 star being distracting, I could see some people seeing this as very distracting prose because it's very hard. Sorry, I'm going to cough again. 1 second. Sorry. I could see people that read this and get very distracted because it's dense words. There's a lot of terms you're not used to.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get that. It can be a hard read. I found it easier to read by not constantly going like, which I guess more not immersion reading one helps because both listening to it and reading. So maybe that helps a little bit. But also I found myself when I was trying to find what each term meant, me going back to look up what is this term, helped less than just getting the context and eventually picking up on a couple. Like there's still probably a term or two I couldn't tell you what it means, based on that. But we should have said this in the spoiler free. I would recommend people to do that. I had a more fun time reading it, just picking up on context. It felt also more like a fantasy world of like, just throw these words at me. I'll get it eventually.
I agree.
And the thing is, I didn't get it all eventually, but that was fine.
Yeah, I'm with you too. If I had to stop every other page and go back to the glossary,
it stops
the flow. The only time where that is fine, I think it's the right way to read a book, mm-hmm, is the Silmarillion.
Yeah.
It's the one book where I think you do want to read the glossary or have a genealogy tree next to you as you're going. Like, it was helpful to actually come across something, go, oh, what is that? And going back to the glossary and index, yep, and learning things. It's the one book I'd say, because it's fine to break up the flow there.
Mm-hmm.
But most other books, no. I think it's better just pick up on context clues and learn it as it goes.
Yeah,
and trust the author will teach you the language as you read.
Yes. And I did appreciate, I noticed this in the prose a lot. Okay, one thing could be annoying for people is Serenity is used a lot.
Serenity now, Serenity now.
I did appreciate that when characters were introduced, where we were talking about people, it also mentioned the relationship to the character and repeated it a lot. There was repetition, but I think it was for comprehension's sake of we would name the character Chinello, who is, I know so clearly she is Maya's father because Chinello would be thrown around and every third time Chinello was mentioned, it would be like Chinello, the mother of Maya.
But it's also part of the language.
Yes, which helps with both the world and prose because it's integrated there. Because it helps the language, makes me more immersed, but also, got it.
Mm-hmm.
That's who that is. Because the names are very hard to remember in the relationship, so I even like that part of it. And we didn't talk about that. There are two big aspects of the prose.
The character with the easiest name to say is our main character, Maya.
That was intentional.
Oh,
goddamn intentional.
Thank God.
No.
Thanks, Serenity.
So you're saying Idra's the next one, because that's so easy to say.
True. Idra's easy.
He's our sequel. But the two other things with the pros, we talk a little bit spoiler-free. One being referring to yourself in the plural, our, we, us. that being used in language. And secondly, oh yeah,
that is used in other culture. Like it is determined, like the royal we. That so it's not unique, but
I thought it was neat in this world. Yeah,
it's well executed here, but I have seen it before.
Okay, and then secondly, what was the other neat thing in the prose? Oh, it's gonna the thy and thous, etc. In the same way, obviously people have used thy and thou before, but this language sounded particularly unique with the thys, the we's. Always felt like I was reading this book. It was very, not, very unique.
It was not our language and our vernacular with added fantasy words.
Yeah.
It was a full style change. And so it one adds to the immersion. So you I think the fact that the glossary and this language explanation is put in the very beginning of the book is almost like a filtering. Instead of putting it at the end of the book where most of it would normally be, it's at the very beginning of like, hey, you know what you're getting into. Like, we're explaining terminology at the beginning, going like, good luck. If this ain't your vibe, quit now while you're ahead. Because I knew it gave me the right expectations going into the book. I started reading it, and like, I think I told you when I first started reading, when like, dude, this book starts with the glossary.
I can't believe you finished in two sittings.
Yeah, I know.
What the hell? That's why you were gone all day on the cruise.
I know.
Damn.
I started reading it and I just...
We missed you.
I didn't leave. I was just reading.
Dang. Where did you get to at the... Do you remember where you stopped after the first read through? Did you get like halfway through the book?
Roughly, yeah.
Dang, nice.
Something like that. Yeah, no, I started reading in the morning and then... went all the way to night and yeah, just kept reading the next day. It's great.
That's awesome.
I loved it.
Do you want to extend a bridge to the audience?
What type of bridge?
I want to extend a bridge to the audience. Okay. Come over that bridge, and just as a third reminder, we have merch.
Yes.
We have
money.
I think we have to finish this with come give us things. The bridge is one way.
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute.
Oh, you have a better joke?
No. Oh, it's bet. They're clicking on a Goblin Emperor review.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume they like Goblin Emperor.
Yes.
Just so
I'm getting flamed in the comments. Yeah.
When you click buy bookmark,
yep.
That money goes to me, the yep. lover of Goblin Emperor.
Oh, right.
You're building the bridge to me,
yeah, to him.
Your friend.
Burn not, the bridge with me.
Exactly. This bridge.
I'm Seth Rish. Just put me somewhere else.
Exactly.
And accept Idra. That's what we've learned. Here's the thing. I want to just convince you, Idris, like, okay.
I like him. He's fine.
Yes, okay, we'll take that.
I like him. He's a good character. I
he's
just
fucking
like,
better.
He's the lowest on the...
He's amazing. All right.
All right.
I'm just trying to be more enthusiastic in something.
You're like, trying.
I'm
You're
trying
your
best.
Best.
Now, okay. This is the segment we do at the end now.
Have you changed your mind on any category?
Let me think deeply. Have you changed your mind? Because I'm going to need to think a minute. I want to like this more.
No, I'm
you were
fairly
confident.
Like,
yeah.
Again, it's
like
hard
your ratings were also fair to like, you only had 1-5 category.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah.
Overall, it still
floored
greater,
you.
It still floored me overall. I mean, it's that tied together.
Greater than some of your parts,
The three things of ultimately the emotional impact, thought-provoking, and then the world-building are all just so excellent together floored me. And that thought-provoking nature really... nailed it home. Like, I'm going to be giving this book out to people. If like, I want them to read this. This is my example of noble bright. It's my example of the just.
To those
ruler.
Who would like it, though. Because
true.
I know some of our friends.
True. I wouldn't give this to Justin.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Oh, Justin
yeah.
would hate yeah, this yeah. book. Mm-hmm. I would never give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think Nick would like this book.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think he would like this
he
one.
Would. He would like
he
this
would
book.
Like this
he
one.
Would like this book. Yeah. He would. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to stay for now. I'm going to
stay for now.
I just keep feeling too strongly about my okayness. I know what? I think if anything, as we are talking about it more, I understand more of why it's so loved. So I have more understanding of all of them. Yeah, I'm also mainly a plot reader, and the emotions carry from that a lot. And like the lowest categories for me were plot and emotion. So it's hard. I don't get carried by the world or by the prose as much, even though those were great. If I was more of that type of reader, I would find this much better.
It does make sense that we were doing we did a video on our ranking our own categories, what we find the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like I put thought-provoking as number one. I believe number two was world.
And for me, it was plot then thought provoking. And I gave the plot 2.75 and thought provoking 3. So yeah. My two most important categories were like there. Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, I'll stick with that. My overall opinion is just not a bad book, well done book that I was not interested in. That's my overall review. How exciting is that?
What a pity. But you know what? Yeah. I love talking about it with you. It is enjoyable to hear your position.
Hey, thanks.
Fuck you!
I just said fuck you with an index finger. I missed the finger. Maya's been rubbing off on me too much.
You gotta do the British one. It's like, yeah. It's the two fingers.
Why did they do that? Oh, you know, I heard do you know the lore behind that?
I do know the lore behind it.
Let's not tell them.
They're gonna have to look it up themselves.
Go on Google, idiot. Yeah, how about that bridge? Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.